Hello and welcome back to Big Nerdy Questions. Welcome back to our nerd train. And tonight, the three of us, and I might as well introduce them now, Matt.
Hello.
And Colleen.
May the seven pillars of Gulu be with you at all times.
And I, see, we all have a training and a love of history. And tonight we're going to combine that with one of our other favorite things, the Avengers. Let's say, for example, that the Avengers cannot be played by their standard actors anymore in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let's say you also have a time machine, but you're a movie producer and you need to fill these roles. And let's say for some reason you're obsessed with the US presidents. If all these things don't make sense to you, just listen for a while and you'll laugh anyway. But tonight's big nerdy question is, what U.S. president would you cast as the Avengers? Now, clearly, instead of having one answer at the end, we're going to have answers for each character as we go along. So there won't be one answer, there'll be plenty. You get more bang for your buck in this episode, as they say. We will be focusing on the Marvel Cinematic Universe Avengers in this episode. Fear not, fans of the Avengers in the comics, we will return to this question again in a later episode, so do not fear, your worries will be allayed shortly. So first, a little housekeeping. This is Big Nerdy Questions episode 10, and we do have a couple things to take care of. First, Colleen, would you mind giving us our Big Nerdy recommendation? And for the first time, it's a trailer.
Yes, I highly recommend that if you haven't seen it yet, that you watch trailer for Star Wars Rogue One. There are two trailers. One's been out for a couple months. The other was released just about a week ago. Please watch it. It's only like 2 minutes long, I think, both trailers, and it is amazing. And just to note for those of you know, possibly like naysayers, people who are hesitating, I was the same way. When I heard that they were making a new Star Wars movie outside of the trilogies, and didn't actually want to see the trailer, was kind of forced to see it because I watched it, you know, as a preview when I was watching another movie. And by halfway through that trailer, I was thinking, oh my God, I have to see this movie. It is amazing. Fans of the original trilogy will appreciate what they're doing with this movie. And it's just amazing, and I'm very excited about it. So please watch the trailer for Star Wars Rogue One.
And Colleen, for those people who may have been avoiding anything about Rogue One, without giving any spoilers away, can you give the general idea of what this movie is about?
The movie is the story of the band of rebels who get the plans to the Death Star and send it to Princess Leia's ship. So the movie will end immediately before a Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, begins.
I am a sucker for stories that fill in gaps. That's why one of my favorite things Doctor Who's ever done was the Night of the Doctor mini episode that showed the regeneration from the Eighth Doctor to the War Doctor. So I love things that fill in gaps in canon and really shows the fans that they appreciate that we are paying attention to these things. So I am really looking forward to Rogue One. Any thoughts, Matt?
Well, if it's Star Wars, I'll pretty much watch it. I'm an addict.
That's okay, sir. You're amongst friends. So that's our big nerdy recommendation of the night, the Rogue One trailer. We hope we'll be recommending the movie in a few months' time. We have a few pieces of feedback tonight from some listeners. First, we have a comment from Enigma, who wrote in via Podbean. So thank you for our first Podbean comment. And Enigma said that in our episode concerning real-life superheroes, he really appreciated that we mentioned the Spider-Man Reign story when Matt, I believe, mentioned the story about Mary Jane Watson's drug struggles. He said that's one of the most underappreciated Spider-Man story arcs, and he was very pleased that we included it as an influence on that story. So thank you, Enigma. And Matt, since you brought it up, do you have any feedback on that feedback?
I'm participating.
Good enough. But thank you very much, Enigma. We look forward to more of your comments and any other comments on that episode. We do have one other one from a special source. My mother listened to the episode about superheroes, and she actually gave a perspective. She wrote in to the show, and I want to give it because it's actually fairly intriguing. She says, "As an older listener, I would like to have superheroes. The main thing I thought about was if Superman was at those school shootings, everyone could have been saved. I would also love to put the lasso around some criminals who we aren't sure if they did it or not. I would love to be able to go to the movies or shopping and know a superhero would be there to protect me. I am so tired of all the real-life bad guys. They seem to always win. So thank you very much for that comment. I think it's a different perspective than what all of us on the panel thought of. Do you guys have any quick thoughts on that?
I just really hate Superman.
I think it's a good perspective to bring up. You know, I think that she brings up some very valid points.
Yeah, and I stand by our original verdict that I think the overall would be negative, but I definitely do see some situations where superheroes could be, well, superheroes and help out. So I don't think there's no worth there, but I think the risk of the supervillains, along with everything else they do to society, would counterbalance that. But please, if you think either way or somewhere in the middle on that episode, we're so glad that episode's generating some feedback. If you have any comments about our shows, please send us in a tweet on @BNQPodcast or send us an email at bnqfeedback@gmail.com or bignerdyquestion@gmail.com. We are always looking for feedback for the show, good, bad, indifferent. We'd love to hear from you. And we know you're out there because we've reached a milestone, Colleen and Matt. We have, as of the recording of this episode, we have over 150 downloads via Podbean and iTunes combined. So thank you so much to our listeners. We wouldn't be doing this if you weren't out there, so we truly appreciate it.
Yay. Yes, it's wonderful to know that people are willing to listen to our ramblings.
Yes.
Thank you, Internet.
Thank you. Thank you.
It does kind of give a feeling of validation.
Thanks for encouraging him, Internet.
Thanks for encouraging all of us, Internet. But you reap what you sow. And tonight, you'll be reaping the combination of historical nerddom and Marvel nerddom that only we can bring to you in such a weird fashion. So without...
Oh my God, what have you done?
So without further ado, it is time to bring the...
Well, there is one further ado.
Well, yes, there is. Matt, I do apologize. We have a sponsorship, don't I? Don't we?
Yes, we do. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the United States National Aeronautics and Space Administration. NASA. We seriously need to up their funding if we want to live on Mars.
That is perhaps the truest sponsorship we've had yet, and makes sense considering we have presidents tonight who have dealt with NASA. So... get on that, government.
That's right. Everybody wants to be a Martian.
Listen to Buzz Aldrin. Get your asses to Mars.
Hashtag get asses to Mars. Mars, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Now with no further ado, I believe it is time for us to get into the question that probably no one has pondered before this episode, but may cause some debate online after it. Who would you cast, or which U.S. presidents would you cast as the Avengers? Matt, if you would be so kind as to briefly explain how we're going to go through these characters.
So, the way we're going to organize it is we're going to go in a specific order, and we have a tier system set up. And tier one, which is the ones we'll be addressing first, are going to be the roster from the Avengers of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, specifically the film Marvel's Avengers. Being Captain America, Iron Man, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Thor, and Hulk. After that, we will move on to the Tier 2 Avengers, who are Avengers who joined after the film and became Avengers either during or leading up to Age of Ultron, being Falcon, Ant-Man, Scarlet Witch, and Vision.
Thank you very much, Matt, and I think that leads us into Tier 1. And the first character you mentioned is Captain America.
He
was the first Avenger. I think every president would probably want to be Captain America, but who has that honor? Colleen, who do you have in Cap's role?
Oh, not just one person. I mean, obviously, I picked, first of all, George Washington. I mean, he was the first U.S. president. He represents honesty and a true patriot, but he also, I think that as Captain America, you'd also have to throw in
I like that.
America.
I like that response. I think there's certainly some validation to all three of those presidents. Matt, I'd like to hear from you.
So what I wound up doing for this was I actually took notes because I'm weird. And I gave myself criteria that a president would have to meet to be that Avenger. And for Captain America, anyone who wants to be Captain America has to be willing to do what they believe is the best thing for America as a whole and the American people and justice. No matter what it means for them personally or politically. And the president that I believe most embodies that, as somebody who has written a little more than is healthy on Franklin Delano Roosevelt, is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Because he put together and pushed through the New Deal over being called, one of the first people to be called a socialist as an accusation of being bad in politics. So you see how that's still going. Without him, we wouldn't have so many of the things that we consider pillars of what is just good governance and being a good society. So I think his policies and actions in office are just the absolute embodiment of the spirit of Captain America with wheels.
With wheels.
Hashtag Captain America with wheels.
Each wheel could be a shield.
If there are any talented fan artists out there who can draw us a portrait of FDR where his wheels are, in fact, Cap's shields, please send us that through Twitter. We really want to see that.
By the way, there is a movie out there called FDR, American Badass. It's probably one of the strangest movies ever made, but it gets a general idea.
So,
just for the record, if it's well done enough and we get that fan art, I will print that thing poster size.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should
and
make
then
it.
Try to put it up in my office and see how quickly I get in trouble.
Thankfully, we do work in a historical office, so it might be okay. I think, first of all, I should point out for the rest of the conversation, clearly some of these people will not have the same physical attributes as who we're matching them up with. I think Matt and Colleen both did a good job of pointing out we're matching up based on personality traits. Because obviously there's not going to be a big green man, for example, when we get to Hulk. And there are no female presidents yet. So
there's no, giant hulking Asgardian god.
No. So we're obviously going to be matching it up on other criteria. So when we get to Black Widow, for example, we're not saying that whoever we pick is feminine. We're saying they match some of the personality traits. That said, for Captain America, I also had a Roosevelt. But I have the other Roosevelt. I picked Teddy Roosevelt. And the reason I have Teddy Roosevelt, in my opinion, I think Speak Softly and Carry a Big Stick could easily be replaced with Speak Softly and Carry a Big Shield. Teddy Roosevelt, in my view, is the ultimate American badass president. He went and fought. He resigned from federal government, a high position in Assistant Secretary of the Navy, to go fight with the Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. But as president, he fought for truth, justice, and the American way, for lack of a better phrase, because he busted the trusts, he tried to stop some of the corruption in the federal government, and he negotiated the peace treaty between the Russians and the Japanese that won him the Nobel Peace Prize. So the same president who said to carry a big stick also won a Nobel Peace Prize. He kept giving a political campaign speech when he was shot, and when he thought that neither party was taking the country in the right direction, he had the political courage to found his own third party, the Bull Moose Progressive Party, and nearly won the 1912 presidential election on a third-party ticket. So in my opinion, TR is one of the most courageous, badass presidents we've ever had, and I would be honored to have him as my cap.
And as a note, after he lost the election, he didn't just go home and cry. He had decided, you know what, screw it. I'm going to go, not really safari, but he went down to the Amazon. He decided to navigate the Amazon River. And this This is in 1912, so remember that. And while he was doing so, he actually discovered a tributary or river off of the Amazon that I think it was actually longer than the Amazon itself.
Yeah, and also I should point out that Teddy Roosevelt came into power, came to the presidency almost through the machinations of others. He was governor of New York, and then the Republican Party put him on the vice presidential ticket with McKinley because they wanted him out of power in New York. And remember, the vice presidency, even to this day, is not a powerful position, but especially in the early 20th century, it was sort of a ceremonial do-nothing presidency. John Nance Garner under FDR said it wasn't worth a hill of beans, and I'm paraphrasing because we're a family-oriented show. When McKinley was assassinated, tragically, by an anarchist, that's when Roosevelt took power as president, and it was foisted upon him, but he did a fantastic job once he got the role. And he really started the progressive movement at the highest levels of government for the next 16 years.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of ironic. They just wanted to get him out of the way, kind of like in the movie, where the army wanted to shove Cap out of the way, and the next thing you know, Theodore Roosevelt is the president of the United States. Just like, next thing you know, Captain America is beating the crap out of the Nazis and, helping us win World War II.
And there's one final point. I'm pretty sure TR would survive being cryogenically frozen because he's that tough.
It would really just be a mildly convenience to him.
Well, there was a quote that said that, Theodore Roosevelt had to die in his sleep because if he was awake when death came, there would have been a fight.
So I think that Colleen's trio of Captain Americas, we've got our characteristics from Washington, Lincoln, and Carter. I've got TR and Matt with FDR. Remember, send us Captain America on Wheels fan art. We want to see that. Or TR holding a shield, or Colleen's three in Captain America uniforms. Basically, any fan art from this episode would be fantastic because anything would just be amazing mashups. So we've got some good starts for Captain America. Let's move on.
Real quick, Josh.
Yes.
Before we move on, I actually want to give my reasoning for not selecting Teddy Roosevelt.
Of course.
Because I think it will transition us well into our next one. Many of the reasons that you chose for Teddy Roosevelt to be Captain America are many of the same reasons I chose to make him Iron Man.
Oh my God, the same thing. I did the exact same thing.
Because for me, for Iron Man, and I believe that's where we should go next.
I agree.
You've got to have the ego.
Thank you, yes.
You cannot have Iron Man without the attitude. That's what makes Robert Downey Jr. so brilliant in the role. Is the character basically is Robert Downey Jr., let's face it. But without the attitude, you don't have Iron Man.
Well, it's just, you have that, Theodore Roosevelt was not afraid to do what he felt needed to be done, despite what other people said. If people told him he couldn't do something, well, screw it, he did it anyway. And he was what they call a bull moose. You just could not stop him. And Tony Stark is the exact same way.
When he resigned as Assistant Secretary of the Navy, and he and later, as the leader of the Rough Riders, took San Juan Hill. Not so much as, I want to serve my country. He's already serving his country. To me, it's more of, no, I'm going to show my boys what's up. I'm going to prove that I can do it personally. And then he did, in a stylish hat.
Well, I think for him, it wasn't so much. Yes, he did enjoy very much the attention, as president, as governor, et cetera, as being a war hero. But I think he did all the things that he did at the scale that he did them to show others, look, if I can do it, so can you. Don't tell me you can't. Don't tell me you're afraid, because, look, I have done it. So I look at, Iron Man, the character of Iron Man, is doing the exact same thing. Where others hesitate or might question, Tony or Iron Man is a person of action. He's going to get things done and, be damned what other people happen to say. There is a great movie. It's called The Wind and the Lion. And Theodore Roosevelt features in the movie as president. And he sanctions the takeover by the U.S. Marines of a country. I think it's in, might be Morocco, actually. And this is during the early 1900s. And there's that wonderful scene that really kind of encompasses the way that Theodore Roosevelt approached things, where the U.S. Marines get off the boat and they literally charge down the middle of town while the ambassadors from other countries, Germany, France, and Great Britain, are watching going, what on earth are these crazy Americans doing? They go up to the palace where the Sultan is, and they literally open fire, and they just mow everybody down, and they raise the flag of the United States, and they say, this is now our territory. And this really did happen. In fact, the U.S. Marines still show that clip from that movie, The Wind and the Lion, to Marines in training today. But that was Theodore Roosevelt's approach, very direct, you know, and to the point. And I think that is a good example of Iron Man's character as well.
Absolutely.
So you two are in agreement that TR is Iron Man. I can't choose TR because he's my cap, but I'm really proud of my choice for Iron Man. And my choice for Iron Man is JFK, and here's why. Now, first of all, a personal caveat. As a historian, I have spent most of my adult life studying JFK's presidency in some way, shape, or form, so I know quite a bit about, you know, the early 1960s and what he was doing in office. I think he's a great fit for Tony Stark for a couple of reasons. First, some surface area thing, or surface level similarities. Comes from a family of wealth where the father is distant because he's obsessed with his career. He has greatness thrust upon him, but can still take care of the job. Both of them have a physical ailment that requires some assistance. In the case of Tony Stark, because of what happened in Afghanistan, he has to build the Iron Man suit. JFK has crippling Addison's disease. And no one knows this when he's in presidency, but even if he's not assassinated, it's entirely possible JFK might have died from the Addisons by the early 1970s, according to some doctors. So the Iron Man suit would have done wonders for John F. Kennedy's physical well-being and being able to help him with maintaining his back, for example, which was the most strongly affected place of his body with the Addisons. He is a playboy for obvious reasons. In all the Iron Man movies, you see Tony Stark, before he gets serious with Pepper, he has different girlfriends every day. And even once he's with Pepper, he can still flirt with the best of them. JFK, while he maintained a loving emotion toward Jackie, clearly had affairs all the time. And while I don't think Tony took it to that level once he's with Pepper, I see the similarity with the playboys. JFK is the kind of president who wouldn't have been afraid to build a house in Malibu and hobnob with the rich and famous. He brought the rich and famous to the White House all the time. Norman Mailer, I believe, was one of his regular guests, but he had people from all walks of life come to parties. He was the first president to really open up the White House to African-American entertainers because he loved jazz. Also, to look at the more substantial arguments, I agree with you that Tony Stark is a character that likes to get things done, and I think JFK, especially toward the end of his presidency, was getting to that point. The Cuban Missile Crisis really transformed JFK from a more thoughtful president to still thoughtful, but he was going to act decisively and on his own accord. So he was starting to change his opinions, becoming more decisive, and I think given more time, he would have been at the same decisive level as a TR. For example, I think that JFK's mix of debonair, you know, almost culture, high culture, with still being a man of the people and a man of action, I think he is a good pick for the Tony Stark kind of character. I see quite a lot of similarities in them.
And now, just to add to that, Josh, also JFK basically kickstarted the NASA, you know, in the entire the space race and our you know, and that rush to get to the moon. So you have all of this, you know, funding going into science, going into technology, engineering. And you think about Tony Stark and running his business and how his business was always the cutting edge technology, pushing innovation.
Yeah, and honestly, I would actually say that Bobby Kennedy is his own personal Jarvis. Because he kept Bobby in the White House as his, you know, no other president has appointed his brother at a cabinet level to be his constant companion in the Oval Office. We've had other presidents who've had advisors in there a lot, like Nixon with Kissinger, for example, or J.R. Haldeman. But this was unique, and I think it was almost a symbiotic presidency between the two Kennedy brothers, from what I've read on their relationship in the Oval. Bobby would almost act as the proxy when John wasn't around, when he was overseas, for example. Not different than Jarvis in a way.
I'm sure LBJ appreciated that.
Oh, LBJ was completely put out of discussions. so he may come up later for that reason. But I think that that's my pick. Matt, do you have any thoughts on JFK as Iron Man?
I think he would be a good second choice. Like, if Teddy turns it down, yeah, I would go straight to JFK.
So we've got some pretty good casts so far. And obviously, I should point out to our listeners, we're going to have some overlap. That's the nature of this. But each individual person probably shouldn't reuse presidents once they've used them already. Unless you have to, because in some cases you might have no better choice. And that said, I believe our next character is Black Widow. So, Matt, do you want to start us off on Black Widow?
Oh, yes, I do. For the role of Black Widow, I gave myself the criteria of a president who was not afraid to kill, personally, wanted to get things done, took crap from precisely no one, was a bit standoffish, and arguably abrasive. Now, I had already cast Theodore Roosevelt as Iron Man, so he was out. So that leaves me, I believe, naturally, with our off-maligned seventh president, the former Major General, Andrew Jackson.
Oh, you're going to get so much from me on that.
Yeah. As soon as you said it, I knew Colleen was going to have some issues with this one. Matt, do you want to put your defense out first before Colleen tears into Jackson? Like a death claw in Fallout 3?
I am not defending his actions. I'm just saying he's the most similar remaining based on the criteria I selected.
I could see that, because I should make it clear as well. None of us are going to defend Andrew Jackson.
He was kind of a D-bag.
Kind but of?
You can be to be an actor. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah.
So, Colleen, do you want to give your choice first, or do you want to give us your opinion about Andrew Jackson?
Oh, I could go on and on and on about Andrew Jackson. I hate him. But anyway.
I loathe him.
Yes, many people have heard me rant about Andrew Jackson and why he should not be on any of our money. But anyway, I digress.
Do you think he's a good choice for Black Widow, though?
Yes, my choice for Black Widow is a bit unconventional because not a president, but could be argued that she was. And I actually chose Edith Wilson.
I like it.
Yes, and not because like she was female, but I just thought, you know what, look. Edith Wilson, when her husband, Woodrow Wilson, suffered a stroke, he was president, he was paralyzed on his left side, she actually took over all of the affairs of state. So it wasn't that it was passed on to the vice president, she took over while he was recovering, and she decided what matters of state were important to bring to the president, and in many cases she actually made decisions herself, you know, went through the papers and had him sign papers and bills, etc. So I think that shows amazing judgment and fortitude, especially this was, you know, early 1920s, you know, so before women even had the right to vote. And so I think she was setting a standard for women, and especially, you know, when you have a lot of men saying women can't do this, women can't do that, you know, she was saying, look, she was running the country. She was completely badass, even though she was doing it behind the scenes, and didn't get the recognition for it at the time, but later she has now been recognized as basically keeping the country in one piece after World War I.
I love that choice, and it's also a hat tip to our panelist, Allison. Her favorite episode of Drunk History is Edith Wilson's biography, where it tells us about the true condition of Woodrow Wilson, which is hilarious. So that's a fair choice. I would argue that she was essentially the president, at least de facto, for that year. My choice for Black Widow is the father of the U.S. Constitution, James Madison. Let me explain. I think of Black Widow, maybe because I'm colored by the Lego games based on the Marvel films, But Black Widow is a queen of all trades. She can kick your ass in a gunfight. She can kick your ass in a fist fight. She can talk to Tony Stark about science. You can talk to Bruce Banner about biology. But she also is a linguist. She can get undercover. So she is skilled in a wide variety of fields. She is a polyglot of skill set. Thomas Jefferson's the obvious one, but I want to save him for someone else. So I went to James Madison because he's a similar kind of polyglot. Farmer, lawyer, he wrote the Constitution, but he also was behind a lot of different policies. He could fight with you in the political arena, but he could also be an extreme intellectual. One of the things he was most proud of was his work with colleges, taking over for Jefferson at Monticello. So I am plugging in James Madison as Black Widow. Also doesn't hurt that he was the shortest president ever, and Scarlett Johansson, I believe, is the shortest Avenger, other than Ant-Man. So, yeah, James Madison as Black Widow. That's my pick.
Well, I will say, Josh, I really like your pick. It is well thought out. And the only reason I am opposed to Colleen's pick is because, well, Edith was the effective president, she was not an actual sitting president.
Yeah, I think it, but I think it is a fair pick, and if nothing else...
I think the argument behind it is brilliant.
If nothing else, I want our listeners to know more about Edith Wilson because she deserves more recognition, so I'll allow it.
Yeah.
Because she deserves some recognition.
Allow Andrew Jackson, I think Edith Wilson is a shoo-in.
I could see Andrew Jackson on that criteria,
look,
though.
Really good at beating people up and killing people. He was really good at it.
If Scarlett Johansson in the next Avengers says she's going to send the villain on a trail of tears, I'm out. So, moving on from Black Widow.
Walk down that trail. Why? Don't ask questions. You've got about 800 miles to go, buddy.
Colleen, you mentioned a big hulking Norse god earlier, so I think it's only fitting for you to introduce your casting for Thor.
I chose William Henry Harrison, and for those of you who are going to, I don't blame you. He's a very obscure president because he was only actually president for 32 days.
Cough, cough.
Ha, 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 Josh. So basically, just brief history on him and why he was president so brief is because his inauguration speech was so long, and it was in, February, and it was rainy, that he caught a cold and died. So this is why I picked Thor, though, okay? So, essentially, I saw a lot of similarities between the two. For example, William Henry Harrison was president for a really short period of time, and so I look at it as, like, looking at Thor, saying he didn't really want to be president. On top of that, if you think his William Henry Harrison's background, he was unwillingly elected because he was running his farm to run for president against Martin Van Buren. He lost, and then he just returned to his farm, to his ordinary life. So I see some parallels between Thor resisting becoming king of Asgard and William Henry Harrison unwillingly kind of running for president. Due to the time period, William Henry Harrison saw battle. He actually led battle against Native Americans. I kind of viewed that to a certain extent as like Thor and his battles against the Jotun. He also killed the leader of the Native Americans in battle, and that was the Native American leader Tecumseh. Such very similar to Thor's confrontation with Laufey. He also was appointed as a minister of a foreign nation. At the time, it was called Gran Colombia, which is present-day Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, Panama, Peru, and Guyana, and northwestern Brazil. Similar to, I guess, like after the movie The Avengers, Thor was appointed as guardian or whatever of Earth. So I saw a lot of similarities between the two, and that's why I chose a more obscure president.
That's a great choice and also a great primer on William Henry Harrison, who never received that much coverage in all of my history training. So, well done. And also, I would love to see an Avengers fight set in Gran Colombia to see how many people know what they're talking about. Matt, who do you have in the hunky god role?
I have one for I think saying it out loud is going to buy me a one-way ticket to hell. I'll tell you that right now.
You can't get much worse than that.
So, for the role of Thor, the big things with Thor are he doesn't really understand Midgard and the people who are different from him, and when he generally tries to be an affable and friendly guy, but when it comes down to it and he feels that he must strike, he destroys all that comes before him in a blinding flash of light, and there's only one president I can think of that fits that bill, and yeah, I'm going to hell, and I may be permanently banned from entering Japan for it, but the 33rd president of the United States, Harry S. Truman.
Oh, dear God, I thought you were going to say George Bush a second.
I was too. I'm actually okay with Truman. I was afraid you were going to go with W with that description.
I mean, George W. Bush, yes, his policies led to a lot of violence and a lot of bombs being dropped, but nobody dropped a blinding flash of light quite as bright as the two that Harry S. Truman dropped in August of 1945.
That's fair. I mean, and Truman, to his death, was convinced that it was the only thing he could do to prevent 10 million Americans being killed in ground fighting in Japan.
Yes.
Just to make a clarifying point, with what Truman did with the atomic bomb, sounds a lot like what Loki attempted to do with that giant spinny thingy.
But we're not casting Loki.
No, like as, for example, as like we're talking about like killing a lot of people versus say deliberately like starting a war, such as like I'm just going to say it like George Bush did in Afghanistan and Iraq.
I think that's absolutely a fair point. I also want to point out with Truman that Thor feels out of place on Earth, and I think Truman felt out of place in D.C. He was not from money. He was a haberdasher. He was a merchant for most of his adult life. And even once he got elected to Congress through the Missouri machine, he never felt like he was around people that were like him. He sort of felt standoffish from Washington insiders. And when he became the president, a lot of Washington insiders were afraid because he was so different from the charming Franklin Roosevelt. So still a good leader, but a very different kind of leader. I think that's
one,
a fair choice.
One thing I'd like to say about my selection of Truman is there were two main factors that led to Truman for me. One of them being his use of nuclear weaponry and just the massive amount of destruction that he doled out. But the other, and I think equally, if not slightly larger part, was that he did, much like Thor in the films, when he came to Midgard and did not understand the difference, or even that there was a difference, really, between Asgardians and Midgardians. That same type of logic and worldview led to Harry S. Truman desegregating the United States military.
I think it's a fair pick.
And I think that is one of the two most important things that he did as president of the United States. Because he desegregated the military in the 1940s, before the Civil Rights Movement. Harry Truman was already like, well, they can do the job the same. Why are we separating them? Just put them together and they can work better because they're people. And that's kind of how Thor sees Midgardians. Well, they can do stuff. Let's let them do stuff and treat them well.
So I love that choice. I love both of your picks, actually. They're quite genius. My pick is a little different. Now, my first thought with Thor was he has an annoying brother, so I initially went to either Bill Clinton, not Bill Clinton, he had an annoying brother, but more so Jimmy Carter with Billy Beer. But, you know, as much as I want Jimmy Carter to be the match, it's not going to be. My pick for Thor is Herbert Hoover, and here's why. I'll explain. Herbert Hoover was an outsider. He was the first president born and raised in California, trained at Stanford. He was not trained in politics or even the law. He was trained as a geologist. he had a strong sense of humanitarianism from a benevolent point of view. And in World War I, for example, he headed the efforts to bring food to civilians who had lost everything in the Western Front. But he wanted to make sure he did that from a high, from a almost a patriarchal way, kind of like I think Thor would treat Earthlings as sort of, you know, kids needing help. When Herbert Hoover, and then he became Secretary of Commerce, so trade amongst different places, and I think Thor is a pipeline between Asgard and Earth. And then when Hoover becomes president, you have the Great Depression. I'm not saying Thor would cause a Great Depression, although stocks may go down when companies start having lightning rods everywhere around them. But what I do think Hoover demonstrates is a fundamental misunderstanding of a problem in the sense that he's unable to sympathize with what people are going through if he's not in it. For example, Herbert Hoover sees the Great Depression, and his initial thought is the government can't do anything to fix it. It's the purview of other people. And I feel like if Thor saw a problem that wasn't something that he could fix himself, he wouldn't get involved because he wouldn't understand the complexities of it from an Earth point of view. You have Hoovervilles built up around the country that people are living in tent cities outside of the major cities because they blame Hoover personally for his inability to fix the Depression, and that's what leads to FDR's landslide win in 1932. Fundamentally, Herbert Hoover was a good man who was caught up at the wrong time, and his misunderstanding of events because of his own personal background is what led his presidency to become one of the most maligned of the 20th century. I see a lot of parallels to Thor.
Fair point.
And I'm sure that Herbert Hoover was considered hunky in his day. Hashtag hunky Hoover.
He also created his own words, like normalcy. I think he's credited with coming up with the term normalcy. So I can see, you know, where Thor is confusing, you know, words that we use here on Earth and can accidentally come up with his own words. So there's a parallel there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. But yeah, we've all got good choices for Thor. Let's move on to Hawkeye. And Matt, would you like to introduce your person for Hawkeye?
So, I had to think to myself, with Hawkeye, what are the defining traits of Hawkeye in the films? And when I think of Hawkeye, I think of a normal guy who put his nose to the grindstone, worked hard his entire life, you know, just did his best constantly, and in a vacuum, his performance would be utterly brilliant, world class, held up on this fantastic pedestal, but he's completely overshadowed by everyone around him because he's surrounded by just the absolute pinnacle of brilliance. Because that's what Hawkeye is. He's one of, if not the best, archer in human history, but he's surrounded by a 90-year-old with the body of a 20-year-old bodybuilder, a genius playboy philanthropist with a robot suit, the Hulk, and a Norse god. You know, best archer in the world doesn't mean much around them. So I had to think, what president was stuck in that position? And I think the perfect example of that is actually the second president of the United States, John Adams.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Andrew Johnson.
He followed George Washington. Mm-hmm. He was succeeded by Thomas Jefferson. The man had 3 diplomatic posts, was involved in the creation of the Constitution. He was in the Continental Congress. He was involved with opposing the Stamp Act. He was one of the prolific writers opposing the authority of the British Parliament. He acted as the counsel for the British in the Boston Massacre because of his belief in the right to a fair trial. And he always did his best at everything he did. And he was fantastic at everything he did. But he was constantly outshone by someone else. And so he became largely ignored.
Yeah, we wouldn't have this country if it wasn't for John Adams.
Yeah.
Would not be.
No,
but nobody thinks about him. Nobody talks about him. Because, like, oh, well, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. That, you know, everybody's, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. We're finally getting a little attention to James Madison.
Black Widow.
Which has taken long enough. He's still not getting nearly enough attention, if you ask me. But John Adams just constantly gets... The main thing people remember John Adams for is that his it was the first father-son presidential duo, with his son being the sixth president in John Quincy Adams.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the TV series.
Da-da, da-da, da-da. Love that soundtrack. Sorry, that was an aside.
And then, of course, when people think, oh, famous revolutionary Adams, they think of his cousin, Sam Adams, because there's a beer named after him. It's like, come on.
Well, what drink would John Adams have? A hot tea with no sugar?
A hot tea? Are you kidding me? He wouldn't be having tea. He's a pancreas.
I was hoping you would say that.
Oh, no, goodness. See, he wouldn't have hot tea. He would have cold brewed tea. He would brew it by throwing it in the harbor.
As a true American, he would be drinking coffee, thank you, with no sugar.
Because America.
Exactly. He wasn't going to support, the Stamp Act or any of those, tariffs on, sugar. Screw that. Side, just, as a historical note, the reason why Americans today drink so much coffee, more than anyone else in the world, is precisely because of the Boston Tea Party and our self-imposed embargo on tea.
So we're saying Starbucks wouldn't exist if it weren't for the Boston Tea Party.
Or John Adams.
Thank you, John Adams, as I sip my Frappuccino.
Exactly. So on the 4th of July, I always make a point to have a nice big cup of coffee because, quite frankly, it's probably the most American thing I can think to do on that day.
Actually, I think I know the most American thing you can do.
Oh, God.
Put on your American flag t-shirt and perch your bald eagle on your shoulder, walk into Starbucks, order the biggest black coffee you can get your hands on, and when they ask your name to put it on the cup, you say... John Adams.
I'm okay with this.
They're going to be like, I'm crazy. Because they're going to go, who?
I'm okay with this. I'm also...
forced them to listen to this episode in its entirety. at the register. It'll hold up the line a little, but it's important.
Very important. Speaking of important, Colleen, who is your choice for Hawkeye?
I really thought that Matt was going to say Andrew Johnson because that's who I picked for almost precisely the same reasons. You have an individual who was completely overlooked for the most point because he shoved in between two very well-known figures. Of course, his predecessor was Abraham Lincoln. Not then, right? Come on. Into the Civil War and eradicated slavery. I mean, hello. And then following him, his successor was, Ulysses S. Grant. Again, enough said, because he was a war hero. He was the general of the U.S. Army and actually worked very closely with President Abraham Lincoln. So you basically have, when you're talking about the 1800s or, the mid-19th century, two huge stars, and poor Andrew Johnson just shoves right between the middle of them. Easily overlooked. He didn't fight in the war at all. He was just a consummate politician. But after Lincoln was assassinated, he really did try, to continue with Lincoln's plans, especially in terms of reconstruction towards the South. But nobody would hear about that. In fact, he was impeached because of that and vilified. And so, poor man, he tried to do what was necessary, what he thought was right. But the rest of the country just wouldn't let him have it. So I feel that in some ways it's very similar to Hawkeye, where he's really brilliant at what he does, but he's just not really able to display, his prowess just because I think he's overshadowed by so many of the other Avengers.
I love that pick. That's a great one.
If I might issue a brief rebuttal.
Okay.
Because I almost selected Johnson myself. Almost. The reason... I selected Adams over Johnson was because I still feel that by making the changes that he made to Lincoln's plans for Reconstruction, he severely mismanaged Reconstruction and left a lasting impact that still exists to this day. He severely mismanaged Reconstruction. That's the reason I passed over him for the casting.
I would put that blame on Congress more than I would Andrew Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I put a lot of blame for a lot of things on Congress, but I'm trying to not be political on the podcast.
Although, to be fair, in the MCU, they need a lot of reconstruction, literally. So Johnson's probably good to be here. So earlier I mentioned I was saving LBJ, and this is where I plug in LBJ, the other Johnson. And I'll explain why. It's almost the same reason that you have for Adams as well as for Andrew Johnson. LBJ's entire presidency was at least publicly in the shadow of JFK because of the assassination. He got the Civil Rights Act passed, but only because he was able to pitch it to the Congress and the American people as JFK's legacy. A lot of things LBJ has done for the country sort of get lumped into 20th century reforms and not associated with him, specifically the Great Society. And if you don't know the Great Society, just in brief, that's for Lyndon Johnson's Great Society gave us Medicare, Medicaid, reforms in Social Security. He increased rural electrification with the Great Society, increased federal involvement in education, and there's a whole lot of other reforms that the Great Society brought us. The Voting Rights Act is another one. Huge, huge legacy in domestic affairs. We would not have the social welfare system we have now, for its good or bad facets, without Lyndon Johnson's presidency. But that fact is totally overshadowed by JFK. To be fair, it is also overshadowed by Lyndon's involvement in the Vietnam War, which is maybe the reason that he's not a perfect fit for Hawkeye. But Lyndon Johnson was the kind of guy who would be decisive. He was a, you know, the consummate politician, but he was also a fish out of water. And he went and fought in Vietnam for reasons that historians have still tried to think about today. But that is his, what mars his legacy. So almost in the same presidency, you have Hawkeye and you have a counterbalance to it. Maybe a figure who did the wrong thing for the wrong or right reason, depending on your historical perspective. But certainly in terms of his domestic policies, I would put LBJ as Hawkeye.
I can see that.
Yeah, same here. I think it's interesting that we all had very similar reasonings as far as choosing, you know, our presidents in different time periods. You have, well, isn't that nice? I have both 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries represented here.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And
the reason I avoid Lyndon Johnson just in general is because I'm really uncomfortable with anybody who habitually places their genitalia on tables to intimidate people.
Yeah, LBJ did that all the time as part of a negotiating tactic, and today, of course, he'd be arrested for it, but it was 19...
I can't see Hawkeye whipping it out, putting it on the table, and then just staring Ultron down.
Well, I don't think it would work with a robot, to be fair, but when you're a congressional aide, it kind of unnerves you. Yeah, LBJ was one of the most... was one of the strangest presidents of the 20th century. And in that way, I think he's almost overshadowed by Nixon because Nixon's personality is analyzed more often. But LBJ had some really freaky stuff that he did when he was in office.
You mentioned Nixon's personality. I call it douchebaggery, but hey, you know, potato, potato.
I wouldn't say that's wrong. I would just say people have analyzed it a lot because his douchebaggery was directly responsible for so much. And yep. As he was president. So we want to get to the Hulk. I think we're going to have to cut it off at Hulk because of the length of our episode.
Yeah.
But do you guys both agree we'll revisit this topic for a part two?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So, but let's finish off tier one in this episode with the Incredible Hulk. Colleen, who's your incredible choice?
Well, quite frankly, I would like to take 10 Teddy Roosevelt to represent the Hulk. But only as the Hulk, not as Bruce Banner. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I feel like they're two different people. So, like, as the Hulk, I would, if you could just take Teddy Roosevelt and then clone him to infinity, then you'd get the Hulk.
Fair.
As far as Bruce Banner, I would choose Woodrow Wilson. Because Woodrow Wilson was an intellectual. So I would have, like, that balance between those two facets of the personality.
And when you made him angry, instead of becoming Hulk, he had a stroke. So.
Well, or in this case, he gets involved in World War I.
That's true as well.
I mean, you think about it, like, Woodrow Wilson was a huge proponent of the League of Nations, which was the precursor to the United Nations. The League of Nations failed horribly, and part of the reason why we had World War II. But I view Woodrow Wilson as, you know, as a huge proponent for peace, specifically for democracy, as a whole. And so when you look at Bruce Banner as somebody trying to maintain his own inner peace so that he doesn't, you know, unleash, League of Nations to prevent another world war from breaking out. Of course, he failed. The United States did not join the League of Nations, just as Bruce Banner often fails to keep the Hulk from, you know, coming out. And as a result, World War II occurred.
I think that's a really fair choice. And I like Woodrow Wilson in that spot. Matt, I know you have a good one for this one, so I'm going to go ahead and do mine first. I'm actually going to put Harry Truman in this spot. Not because he's an intellectual, although he was incredibly smart, even though he wasn't formally educated, but you wouldn't like Harry Truman when he's angry. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, you're going to hell for the exact same reason I am.
I'm just saying it's not a good thing at all. The buck truly did stop with him for a variety of reasons. Can you say both, and not just the A-bomb, but also the Korean War, because Angry Truman, hashtag Angry Truman.
That followed, that got us involved in all the wars trying to stop the spread of communism.
Yeah, so that's my pick for the Incredible Hulk, the Incredible Truman. Matt, do you want to finish us off with your interpretation of the Incredible Hulk?
So, for the Hulk, I had to consider a president who embodied, while in office, both Bruce Banner and the Hulk. And I actually have to say, I think this was one of the hardest ones for me to cast. And I had to look for a president who has a public image of the stately, kind man who wants everyone to get along, doesn't want any splintering or falling apart, wants everyone to stay together and be friends, abhors violence, abhors being angry. But when you make him angry, he gets right in the middle of it, and he will jack you clean up. And the only one I can think of who did that specifically while in office, and this is going to sound completely insane, so hold on to your tinfoil hats, listeners, the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln.
I was good. I was debating between Lincoln or Reagan, honestly, what you were going to say.
Because.
Reagan smash.
Hashtag Abe smash.
This needs to go viral. Abe smash. Matt, logistically...
He wanted the country to stay together. You know, he worked hard to try and prevent secession. Even when Fort Sumter happened, he tried to keep things together. And then the secession was declared, and he tried to still bring the country back together as hard as he could. And finally, when he determined that the violence was inevitable, he managed the war by telegram, and a lot of his decisions helped advance the war in a fortuitous direction. And honestly, the war would have been over in 1863 if it hadn't been for General George Meade.
Okay, so for any of you Civil War folks out there, you are welcome to comment furiously on anything involving the Civil War. Have fun.
Yeah, I'm going to get flamed probably by a series of professors who I actually know who have written books on the Civil War. But, yeah, I think Abraham Lincoln is both Bruce Banner and the Hulk.
So can I ask you a logistical question, Matt?
Yes.
When Abe hulks up, would he still be wearing his top hat?
Clearly. That's how you know it's him.
That and the beard.
Well, the funny thing is, he didn't even have the beard until... I believe it was the first or second of his major debates, and a child told him he would look better with a beard, so he grew one, and it stuck.
Or maybe he was just so busy during the war he didn't have time to shave.
To be fair, that's probably accurate. And also with Lincoln, he was the tallest president, and some scientists have said or speculated that he may have had a genetic disorder to give him his lanky appearance. Who's to say that's not gamma radiation?
Okay, Abraham Lincoln as Planet Hulk. This needs to happen, Internet. This needs to happen.
I think, Internet, we have given you so many possibilities tonight for fan art, which I would do, except I can't even draw a stick figure without getting complaints. So if you have any skill at sketching, and you want to be our favorite listener forever, please sketch one of these figures in their new role, because this has been an amazing lineup we have so far. And folks, we're just getting started. We have Tier 1 finished. We still have Tier 2, and there's other characters from the movies as well as the comics that we want to get to in the Marvel Universe that need to be cast with U.S. presidents. And we're also, at some point on B&Q, considering recasting the Star Wars universe with European royalty, past and present. So you've got those things to look forward to in the future. But for now, I believe this episode will be wrapped up. So thank you very much to Matt and Colleen. Before we do wrap up, however, Matt, we have to kill Jar Jar, don't we?
Yes, we do, Josh. And tonight, in keeping with the theme of the episode being presidents who aren't quite their presidential selves, Jar Jar died at the hands of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. You see, he was crushed under the sheer weight of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's gains that he used to deadlift the economy out of the Great Depression.
Wow. That's well played, sir. That's a thing. Let us know, listeners, if you like that death, because that's amazing. But I'm going to go ahead and sign off for B&Q this week. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Thank you, Internet.
And thank
you. Look forward to your many, many, many comments about how wrong we were today.
Oh, absolutely. This one's going to generate a lot of interesting feedback. And thank you very much, Matt.
Remember, Internet, your hate gives me strength.
And for Colleen and for Matt, this is about to be flamed Josh saying good night from B&Q headquarters.